This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder. And the professor is good to tour five capitals involved in the war on the world island. That's Eurasia, Ukraine. But all players are now part of the story. Kyiv is continuing to ask for more and more air defense. And I have this from the Department of Defense in these last days. U.S. allies work to supply Ukraine air defense needs. Air defense capabilities, goes the report, remain the absolute priority as Ukraine seeks to stop the Russians from further damaging the civilian infrastructure. Russia has been unsuccessful militarily in its unprovoked invasion of neighboring Ukraine and has increasingly turned, goes the report, to targeting civilian infrastructure. This week's high temperatures in Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, is forecast to be 31 degrees Fahrenheit with lows in the teens. The Russian attacks have cut power to millions of Ukrainian civilians and affected water, transportation, and much more. The official says these airstrikes are horrific attacks to punish the Ukrainian people. As winter approaches, they serve no legitimate military purpose. Professor, Kyiv wants all the air defense we can rush to them. The Patriot system, all the stuff that is available in all of NATO and, I believe, beyond. So far, we have not satisfied. Is there a reason for this?
Well, I think that the reason, unfortunately, I think the Ukrainians are quite right. They are outgunned by the Russians. The Russians are using drones, and they have qualitatively better aircraft than the Ukrainians have. And they also, the Ukrainians, are using tanks, most of which are captured from the Russians and that are, 40 years old. Now, that said, the Ukrainians are doing okay. But given the urgency of simply forcing a military termination on the Russians, I think we could do a lot more. There's no reason, as I'm fond of thinking, if this were 1973 and Ukraine were Israel and Zelensky were the most remarkable gold in my ear, those Patriot missiles and those advanced tanks would already be in C-5As flying to the Middle East, or they probably would have landed there. Golda is reported to have told the Americans that if they didn't supply the Israelis who were being defeated in the Yom Kippur War, it was a very, very close run thing. She threatened nuclear attacks on the Arab capitals. Now, this was a bluff as far as we can tell, but Nixon took no chances. He just sent the weapons over, and the war was stabilized. In Ukraine, we don't feel the same urgency. And remember, that was political urgency at home. It didn't really have anything to do with mapping a peaceful outcome for the Middle East. We are prevaricating. We're talking about, as the waitress will say to you in the restaurant, are you working on that? Well, to say that we're working on Patriot systems is ridiculous. We have these systems. They're already constructed. We have the planes. All we have to do is put them in the planes and fly them over there. But we have a reluctance to do so. Now, the Ukrainians are going to get what they need, although I don't think it's going to be optimal. But they're getting, for instance, old S-300 missiles from former Soviet allies. But the Patriot is the gold standard, and we're not giving it right now, although we're working on it. Although what we're working on, I don't know. This is a well-known system. We understand all its characteristics. We've got a map that shows how to get to Ukraine, and we've got planes that can carry them. So I would say that this reflects our government's abiding and rather odd sense that in a negotiated solution, which is the sort of summum bonum of the diplomats, such as they are in Washington, the solution must include some sort of gains even for the aggressors. So rather than going for a lethal destruction of the completely illegal Russian position in Ukraine, we are expecting that somehow we are going to be able to divide up the Ukraine, divide up Ukraine in a way that will please the Russians, will please the Ukrainians, will please us, and please everybody else, and somehow serve as the foundation for a general peace in Eurasia. And this is madness. We have to get this right, or we're simply going to get more trouble. I should add that the military situation has really changed very little since we last talked. The Ukrainians' advance is proceeding. They're prudent. They don't throw thousands of men into, you know, the Russian cannons. This is not Austerlitz. General Surovikin's absolutely, they're really demented. They're brutal to the point of madness. His offensives, which we talked about last week, they have not lived up to their billing. It is true that the Russians have gained a little territory on the west side of the Donbass area, a little bit, and they're trying to somehow get the Ukrainians off their lines of communications. But I think that if that were going to happen when Surovikin took the gloves off, as it were, it would have happened already. So we're really where we were before, except that the burn rate of people and munitions is greater.
The theory offered early on in the Russian barrage against the civilian infrastructure was that they were seeking to exhaust Ukraine's ability to defend itself, to fire as many missiles as possible and oblige Ukraine to empty their arsenal. That apparently from, you have to read between the lines, the Defense Department's not going to tell us how many weapons they have left. That looks to be what is being worried about, why we're working to get more to them. At some point, they will run out, and we don't believe the Russians are going to run out first, do we?
Well, I'm not sure. Everybody is short of gunpowder right now, of high explosive, and it turns out that a key component of high explosive, artillery propellant and so forth, is made only in China. Germany has 2 days' worth of high explosive. Everybody's running short. But I think that the Russians, I think that what we must do is match the Russians, and we can do this. But if we do it, the result of that is going to be to tip the peace table ever more toward a Ukrainian victory and nothing for Russia. Now, as I've suggested earlier, there are alternatives in the whole Eurasian scene that may make that possible. But right now, I don't think our administration is focusing on those. I think rather they have with their characteristic impulse, their instinct for the capillary, they think if they can somehow figure out a line between Luhansk and Donetsk or something that is satisfactory to everybody, that will somehow undergird a new Eurasian order. And as I bore you every week by saying, what's coming out of this is going to be a big, big treaty, a big reorganization of security. It's not going to be some agreement on the partitioning of cities or of provinces or anything like this. This is a big, serious project, and I'm not sure that we have the imagination that is required for that.
We're headed to Brussels. Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, Five Capitals, the Brussels capital of both the EU and NATO. And the EU has achieved, after weeks, a price for the oil price cap for Russian seaborne oil. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.